Senator Bato de la Rosa insists he is serious about running for president, but still wants presidential daughter Sara Duterte Carpio to take his place. Later on in the program, we'll speak to Human Rights Watch senior researcher Carlos Conde and Commission on Human Rights spokesperson Jacqueline De Guia on the prospects of a De La Rosa presidency. The Catholic Bishops' Conference of the Philippines and rock band U2 among the latest to recognize Maria Ressa's Nobel Peace Prize win. And several areas in the Philippines under storm signal number one due to tropical storm Mari. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with this story. Last-minute presidential contender Senator Ronald Bato de la Rosa only knew he was gunning for the presidency, well, at the last minute. See, Senator de la Rosa admits he only found out that he was going to be PDP Laban's presidential bet just hours before the deadline of the filing of certificates of candidacy. But de la Rosa insists he is serious about gunning for the country's top post. However, he admits he is still hoping that presidential daughter and Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio will change her mind and take his place. There are widespread speculations Duterte Carpio will eventually drop her re-election bid in Davao City to try to succeed her father in Malacañang.
I'm still hopeful. Considering that itong clamor sa kanya ay hindi lang Davao City. Hindi lang to lead the Davao City, kundi to lead the country, sana magbago yung isipan niya. Depende yan how you look at it. If it is a mockery to you, then so be it. If it is a strategy for you, then so be it. As long as it is legal, I have no problem with that. If the current decision of Mayor De Sara stands until mag-expire ang November 15, then this is it. I'm in for a one big fight. So laban tayo, fight.
Meanwhile, the ruling PDP Laban Party asserts it is not toying with the country's election process. The party's Secretary General Melvin Matibag also emphasizing there's nothing illegal about candidate substitution.
Itaga mo na sa bato na si Senator Bato na ang kandidato nating presidente ng PDP Laban. From today until November 15, wag mo muna ibaon yung taga sa bato. Kasi the covenant so allows substitution. But we are prepared to have a candidate na bato, go. Sabi nga namin, bago 2022. In fact, starting next week, we'll be having some caravans sa provinces promoting the Senator Bato and Senator Go tandem. Kami naman po, we are exercising yung aming rights within the bounds of the resolution of the COMELEC. Pero hindi naman po, it's not really a mockery. Maybe it's more of the preparation namin how to handle it.
An election lawyer calling on the poll commission to shorten the deadline for the certificate of candidacy for withdrawals and candidate substitutions. Attorney Romulo Macalintal says the current November 15 deadline is too long as it suspends the electoral process.
Pangalawa, parang they are making a mockery of our electoral processes. We are making a mockery of this substitution process. Para bang pinalabas nila na mga tao ay walang alam, para bang pinalabas nila yung mga tao ay sige, bahala lang kayo kung gusto ninyo maghintay. Kaya dapat tinitigil na itong sistemang ito ng substitution na napakatagal. Kung merong deadline na dapat gawin ng COMELEC, gawin nila ng deadline na kasama na yung substitution. Halimbawa, instead of October 1 to 8, pwede nilang gawin na October 1 to 15, which is already inclusive for those people or candidates who will be withdrawing the certificate of candidacy or for political parties to be given time to substitute for their candidates who would be withdrawing.
Vice President Leni Robredo revealing the endorsement of opposition coalition Isambayan inspired her to seek the country's highest post. During her Sunday radio show, Robredo shared initially she had only planned to either run for a local position or to retire. She and her running mate, Senator Francis Pangilinan, are thankful to all those who expressed their support, but they also reminded their supporters of the uphill battle ahead.
Sana mapalawak pa natin yung ating hanay. Kasi ito lang kasi yung pwedeng lumaban sa fake news eh. Nahihirapan kami ka, Eling, ma-penetrate yung mga sites na lahat talaga propaganda saka fake news. Kasi gumagastos talaga sila ng napakaraming pera. At maraming naniniwala. Maraming naniniwala kasi... yun yung nababasa nila at nahihirapan kami doon kasi wala naman kami kaeling resources.
Ito ang laban ng ating henerasyon. Eh ano pa ang choice natin? Itumaya na tayo, ilaban na natin. Tapos, masasabi natin na nung panahon nga na mayroong ganitong krisis, pinakamatinding krisis sa ekonomiya in the last 40 years and pinakamatinding krisis sa kalusugan in the last 100 years. At least masasabi natin nung kasagsagan ng krisis, tanindigan tayo.
Senate President and Vice Presidential Aspirant Vicente Soto III visits the province of Cebu. He met with Governor Gwen Garcia to discuss the COVID-19 situation there, among other things. The aspiring VP also conducted a town hall meeting with different sectors in the Central Visayas region. Meanwhile, Manila Mayor and presidential contender Francisco Isko Moreno Dumagoso visited Bacolod City over the weekend. Many supporters came out to greet him on his way to a private meeting. After the week-long filing of certificates of candidacy, the Commission on Elections has resumed voter registration. The poll body gave in to the clamor of the public and lawmakers to extend the registration period for the 2022 elections, since the process was disrupted by several COVID-19-induced lockdowns.
Registro na po kayo. Huwag nyo nang hintayin, maubos pa itong extension period. At kung kakayanin ninyo, magsama kayo ng iba pang hindi pa nakakapagparehistro. Tulong-tulong po nating trabahuin itong pagpaparehistro para mas marami ang makaboto sa darating na halalan.
The poll body is advising the public to check the website comelec.gov.ph for registration forms and pertinent information. In other news, Rappler CEO Maria Ressa hopes her Nobel Peace Prize win further inspires Filipino journalists. That's amid the Duterte administration's attacks against the press. Ressa says the battle toward free press should be a collective effort among news organizations.
President Aquino or President Ramos or President Arroyo, journalists do our jobs. Power tends to take things sensitively, but that is our role as the fourth estate. I think this is why the Nobel Committee gave the prize this year to journalists, because we have this power that has been given to us that is a reflection of the power of the people. But what it requires of every journalist is courage.
Meanwhile, Ressa's lawyer, attorney Ted Tess, says they are now seeking permission from government to allow Ressa to receive her award in Norway. The Philippine government had banned Ressa from leaving the country last year on account of her pending cases.
The world is watching. That would be it would be very, very unfortunate if, for example, Maria would not be allowed to travel to receive the award and everyone else is there. But then we will see what the Court of Appeals will do. We are hoping that the Court of Appeals will agree and we will be filing the motion soon.
The opposition and an international rock group among the latest to recognize Maria Ressa's huge Nobel Peace Prize win. Vice President Leni Robredo praised the veteran journalist, saying the honor was much deserved. Robredo's vice presidential running mate, Senator Francis Pangilinan, also highlighted how women have come through for the Philippines.
Ang laking bagay na may Pilipino na naging Nobel Peace Prize. Tinitingnan ko nga mga articles. Yung last time na may journalist na naging Nobel Peace Prize awardee, nung panahon pa ni Hitler, Nung panahon pa ni Hitler, isang European na journalist na lumaban ng lumaban talaga doon sa diktadurya ni Hitler.
Talagang sunod-sunod at puro babae pa. Di ba? Nagbibigay ng parangal at honor sa ating bansa. Si Hedilyn, first time mag-gold. At ito, first time na ang Pilipino ay nakatanggap ng Nobel Peace Prize. So we are really very proud.
On Twitter, you too expressed their gratitude to the Nobel Committee for recognizing journalists whom the rock band said are guarding democracies with their words and not their weapons. The Catholic Bishops' Conference of the Philippines also congratulates Ressa. The CBCP hopes her win will strengthen the public's conviction to build a nation where journalism is free. Meanwhile, the Philippine Center for International Poets, Playwrights, Essayists, and Novelists clarifies it does not share the opinion of its founder, National Artist for Literature, F. Xionil Jose. Jose had said Ressa does not deserve the Nobel Prize, claiming the Philippine press is alive and well. But the group says press freedom and human rights have been under attack under the Duterte administration. Going back to our top story today, the last-minute presidential bid of Senator Bato de la Rosa. Should the longtime Duterte ally win, could this also mean the perpetuation of President Duterte's bloody war on drugs and human rights violations? Here to discuss that possibility is veteran journalist Carlos Conde. He's senior researcher at the Asia Division of Human Rights Watch. Caloy, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Casey, for having me. Nice to see you.
All right. So he has already said, we're not even talking about the possibility here. Senator Bato de la Rosa has already said in an interview that should he win, he's going to retain Oplan Tokhang too. And that's the backbone of the president's bloody war on drugs. First of all, your thoughts on that?
Well, God forbid he wins, okay? This country has suffered enough already under this administration, and another administration that is going to pursue the same policy, the same brutal policy, will be really catastrophic. So, but you know, this is all not surprising. I mean, siyempre paninindigan ni Bato itong drug war. He will do the same things that his principal has done since 2016. So it's not totally surprising.
Ang isa pang pinaninindigan niya, he's also very sure about this. What is clear to him is that those who have perished in the drug war are not extrajudicial killings. Your thoughts?
Well, the only way to really determine that and the only way to dispute that or prove that is for an independent investigation to take place. And, you know, the thing is that we cannot take the word of people like Senator Bato or the police or even President Duterte about these things because they're the perpetrators of all these violations. So really, it's self-serving of him to say that, you know, these killings are legitimate and that the people who died were nanlaban or they had fought back. That's why they were killed. That's not entirely true. Our own research shows that a lot of these victims were killed, and oftentimes the police would plant evidence on the bodies of the victims to make it appear that they had fought back. So again, only an independent investigation can arrive at the truth, and we cannot expect Bato, Senator Bato, and the police to do that.
But here's the thing, Caloy, how would you reconcile that narrative with the feeling of many people on the ground that they actually feel safe? Because when they walk down the streets, what used to be the throne of drug pushers and drug addicts, it no longer exists in their barangays. And therefore, there is this feeling of security under this drug war. Carlos?
There's some things to unpack there, Casey. I think this whole idea that the communities feel safer now because of the drug war. I mean, if you are in a community that's surrounded, you know, surrounded by police and barangay tanods and barangay officials, of course you will feel safe. Of course, the presence of all these police and of all these law enforcers will logically, I think, will drive down the commission of the usual crimes. And so I will not dispute the police's claim that crime rates have gone down. The fact is that while that is happening, a lot of extrajudicial killings are also happening. I mean, these are not You cannot claim that the community is peaceful, but at the same time, these killings are taking place. So it's not, you know, in these communities, people say that because they know that they're being watched, they know that people are listening, they know that, you know, if you live in these communities, you can easily be identified as, you know, expressing this sort of opinion, and you will be, you know, you will be, God forbid, visited by these authorities. So, of course, they will say that. In the same way that in many of these surveys that say supporting the drug war, you know, respondents coming from the same community will say that. But if you look at, if you really talk to them on the ground, face to face, there's a different picture that will emerge. So I urge people to really not just take the government's word in all of this.
Hmm. But see, I've talked to some as well, Kaloy, and they speak of this reality for them. And that's why I want to find out how, for example, journalists like you and your group as well would sort of bring this narrative to them. Because to them, it's okay that... they're feeling safe right now at the expense of some deaths. You get it?
Yeah.
Their reality is that, okay, there were some deaths, but this is how I feel right now, and therefore it's okay. So how do you bridge that disconnect?
Well, you know, it's rather difficult, to be honest, to bridge that disconnect, as you put it, because I think at this point of the drug war, 6 years into it, the idea that violence as a way of resolving issues in the community are now normal. The normalization of violence, the normalization of extrajudicial excess, extrajudicial killings, summary executions, these have been normalized. So it's really difficult to do that. And this, you know, giving people the sense that they're safe because of the presence of the police, because of all this because of the anti-drug campaign, it's an inevitable, I think, result of this campaign. But on the other hand, I think it needs to be said that the only way for people to really feel safe is if the rule of law, is practiced, if the criminal justice system is working, if accountability mechanisms and human rights are being upheld. And right now, that is not happening. I mean, this is going to take a long while to resolve. It's going to take a long, long while for people to genuinely feel safe. This is what the drug war has wrought on us. It damages our perception of what is safe. It damages our perception of public safety, because we've been told from 2016 that the only way for us to exist peacefully is through violence. It's a monumental dilemma, predicament for all of us.
This is what Senator Bato de la Rosa did say about the continuation of the drug war under his presidency, should he win. He said that's going to continue, but not without listening to the recommendations and suggestions. He's going to listen to that too. So what do you think might these tweaks or suggestions be if he does win the presidency and this drug war continues, or Plan Tokang 2 continues, Kaloy?
Yeah, it seems clear to us and to them as well that the pressure from the international community, the international attention that all of these horrendous human rights abuses have gotten over the past 5 years are bearing down on them. This is pressuring them to tweak, as you say, the drug war. I mean, you know, the victory itself, the honor itself that Maria Ressa got from the Nobel Prize Committee is a validation of all this reportage by the media about the drug war. And I think that adds to the pressure. So if he wins and he says, okay, we're going to still do the drug war, but no, we're going to be tweaking it, we'll probably make it less horrific. I mean, you know, that sounds like music to our ears right now. But really, what we would want to happen is for the ICC to complete its investigation about these killings and panagutin si President Duterte and isama na rin niya si Senator Bato de la Rosa, because he is the main man in the drug war after Duterte.
Yeah, you mentioned that. You mentioned the ICC. He is one of those charged, together with the president, as one of those allegedly behind crimes against humanity here in the Philippines under the Duterte administration, that he is now seeking the presidency. What does that tell you?
Well, it goes also, I mean, to be honest, his announcement or his filing of candidacy came out of left field for many of us. And, you know, I mean, he's pretty much, I think, a placeholder. So us here talking about, you know, that this is something that's actually going to happen. I mean, it's a little bit awkward to talk about this as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, since we're here, I think, you know, he's going to parlay whatever that he can out of this election to protect himself in the same way that President Duterte is going to use, you know, whatever power he has left to try to evade accountability from the ICC. And the same holds true for De La Rosa. So they will try. If he wins, he will definitely use the power and the position to evade accountability from the ICC. But as with Duterte, I don't think he can do that. That the long arm of the ICC, of the law, is going to catch up with him. And hopefully the ICC will really start looking closely and seriously into his culpability in the trouble.
Caloy, you mentioned that, you know, we're still a long way. There's still a long way to go and I'm paraphrasing here, to sort of fix the damage that has been caused by this administration when it comes to human rights. But when you look at the current contenders now, from Senator Bato de la Rosa down to Senator Amani Pacquiao, all the names in between, is it clear to you which of them will deliver and which of them will not deliver the changes that you're looking for?
Well, here's the thing. You know, if you list down all of these candidates, including VP Robredo, I'm not campaigning for VP Robredo here, but I'm just saying matter-of-factly here that of all of these candidates, it's only VP Robredo who has stood resolutely against the drug war, against the human rights abuses that has happened in the Philippines since 2016. Nobody else has come forward and, you know, condemn the abuses in the drug war the way that VP Robredo has done. So, I mean, from that indication alone, and, you know, I think it's a no-brainer that as far as human rights is concerned, it's going to be VP Robredo who's going to be the champion of it. I don't expect the other candidates, let alone De La Rosa, to suddenly parrot human rights as a campaign issue. But I think the office of VP Robredo will make it a campaign issue. They should make it a campaign issue. I think it's about time that human rights get the attention it deserves during elections. And since the Marcos dictatorship, we haven't had an election where human rights was a key issue until now. And hopefully VP Robredo will really be serious in tackling it. And as to the other candidates, it's not too late. You know, they should condemn the drug war. They should promise to make sure that accountability will happen if ever they win. There's no ifs and buts about the drug war. The drug war is evil. The drug war is a monstrous policy as it is. We're not saying that the government should not tackle the drug problem in the Philippines. We're saying that it has to be tackled in a human rights respecting way. No candidates have so far shown that kind of commitment other than VP Robredo.
You said a while ago that human rights, the human rights issue should be made a campaign issue. But you know how it goes, Caloy, the spin doctors, the operators, the campaign workers behind all these candidates, they're going to tell you it's not a gut issue. It hasn't been a gut issue. It's not something that the people on the ground really value.
Well, you know, it should be a gut issue. I think, you know, if you talk to the communities that has been ravaged by the drug war and you tell them that it's not a gut issue to them, I think they'd be offended. I mean, there's like, you know, communities around the country that have been affected by the drug war. Thousands and thousands of families have lost loved ones. because of the drug war. I don't see why it's not a gut issue. I think they've been made to believe that it's something that needs to be done by government. They, you know, and also you have to take into account the fact that in these communities, in this drug war, fear is a constant factor. Fear is, you know, is something that, you know, the drug war, the violence terrifies people. So they don't talk about this as openly as they should. So that's why it's not being talked about in the general sense. But, you know, you talk to the victims of the drug war. You, I mean, many of these people, when you talk to them, they talk to the media, they talk openly. They talk, you know, I would say they articulate their feelings about what has happened to them. But this, you know, this need to be articulated as well to the public during the elections. That will make it a gut issue.
Yeah, because you know how it goes, right? You know how it has been going the past several years. There are many people who are making a lot of people believe that when it comes to human rights, you know, it's something that you can't eat. Hindi mo naman makakain yan. Maglalatag ngayon ng pagkain sa hapagkainan. Hindi naman. So bakit tayo si sentro dyan? Let's talk about other issues that are more sensational when it comes to courting that vote. What do you say about that?
I think I will put that at the door of politicians. Why this issue and why this particular aspect on the issue of human rights persists? I think it's not so much that the public, the people who are affected by human rights violations are not talking. I think it's because politicians have chosen to ignore this problem for a long, long while. Mm-hmm. And it has to stop. The candidates who are running in the elections and who are cognizant of the problems that the drug war has brought and really the human rights catastrophe that we've been facing, they should speak out about this. They have to make this a campaign issue. And I think, you know, they have to mainstream the human rights discussion. And the human rights movement, particularly, they need to make this, you know, a mainstream issue as well. And the press, and all the civil society groups, ginagawa na nila lahat to make this a mainstream issue.
Yeah.
Except that the same efforts from politicians are not there. So we hope that the election will change that.
Before we go, Kaloy, we do know that a good friend of ours passed away recently, leaving a void not just in many people's lives, but also in the very heart of the Commission on Human Rights. Well, Chito Gascon, who was the chairman of the Commission on Human Rights, passed away recently. What do you think will be the implications of that vacant seat at the helm of the commission?
Well, first of all, as with many, many others, rights defenders, we are very saddened by the passing of our dear, dear friend, Chito Gascon. He is a dear friend to a lot of us in the human rights movement, in government, and in many sectors. You know, he will be hard to replace. His commitment to human rights was top notch. But he will somebody will take the mantle. I think we lost a very good man in the human rights movement. Somebody who really stood against the attacks against human rights in the past 5 or 6 years. He marshaled the commission to be. Under the Human Rights Commission to be much more responsive to the needs of the times. And that is a leadership that we hope will be continued by whoever will replace him. But again, his passing comes at a very difficult time for the human rights movement, you know, and it's, but we are, of course, happy that he contributed so much, not just to this movement, but to this country. And we will take inspiration from that. I'm sure a lot of Filipinos will appreciate the commitment that he had shown to the Philippines and to the cause of human rights, and that will live on. And we hope that in the future, whoever will lead the Commission on Human Rights will keep that in mind.
And that President Duterte now has a couple of months left before for him to fill up that position. What are your thoughts going into that?
Well, just contemplating this makes me really sad, but you know, anything can happen, you know, and that's one of the things that really worries me about the last months of this administration, which is that he still has the power to shake up the Commission on Human Rights to appoint people that will probably, you know, I don't know. I don't want to preempt them, but who are we kidding? I mean, it's the president who's going to appoint somebody who, to lead the commission on human or to compose a human rights commission, and we can be certain that he will put people there who will be at the very least not confrontational, to put it mildly. And you know, the impact of the effect and impact of that on the human rights movement or the human rights situation in the Philippines, I don't want to even contemplate.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Carlos Conde there, Senior Researcher of the Asia Division of Human Rights Watch. Kaloy, always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for joining us today. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you, Casey. Good afternoon. Yeah.
Thanks. That was a quick look at the weather today. Still on the topic of human rights and the war on drugs, we're now joined by Commission on Human Rights spokesperson, Attorney Jacqueline Deguia. Attorney Deguia, nice to see you again. Thank you for joining us today.
Yes, it's a pleasure, Carmina, and to all our viewers out there, a pleasant afternoon.
First of all, our condolences on the passing of Chito Gascon. Chito was a very good friend of this program. We share your sadness. Now, I want to take a moment now, Attorney Deguia, to talk about the challenge that was before Chito at that time and still is for the entire commission. The challenge of fighting for human rights under an administration who's widely perceived to be an oppressor of human rights. How was that challenge for him and for the entire commission under his leadership?
Yes, you know, Carmina, his was the most difficult. We must remember that years before, nobody knew about the Commission on Human Rights. Nobody was interested about the mandate of the CHR. Because the CHR was unknown before, there was also no strong public opinion about it. And same is true with the government. It wasn't antagonistic to the CHR. And the human rights landscape that he also operated on was unparalleled. There were a lot of human rights challenges that we faced during his tenure. The war on drugs is one example. The killings of a lot of media men, lawyers, human rights defenders is also unparalleled. And it is a very unique situation that he had to handle. It would have been difficult. It would have been easy for him to have backed down and take the easy way out. But his courage, his conviction, his principles were very strong up until the very end. He is a visionary. It was very clear upon him that work had to be done, even in the most difficult of times. Even during the pandemic, he was very relentless in the desire that the presence of the commission is felt, even in the most far-flung of areas.
How would you describe the kind of leadership that he showed as he continued to fight the so-called enemy from within?
You know, Carmina, he was a visionary and he was a very eloquent speaker. You only had to listen to him and you would already know the direction that he wanted the commission to take. He was also very hard on the people on the inside. He pushed us to do our best. It was very difficult for our investigators and lawyers to keep on doing their work, but he was very passionate and he impressed upon us the importance of doing our work, especially during these times. He was also a steady pillar of support for all the employees. He had the employees foremost in his mind. It was also ironically during this time of many difficulties externally that we strengthened as an institution. We saw improvements in infrastructure. That also made it possible for us to be more visible in the regions because of the vehicles. We had 200 new positions because of him also. Our regions had their own regional buildings. He made also sure that there were safe spaces for everyone. He welcomed everyone. And his approach was very collaborative up until the very end. Although he maintained a healthy balance, I would have to say, and he understood best what an NHRI was and what his role is as an NHRI. He was an activist prior to his stint as the chairperson of the Commission on Human Rights, but he knew how it was very important for the NHRI to reach out to government so that at the end of the day, our recommendations, our desires for policy change will be taken into consideration by government. And that's why he made an extra effort, even if it was very difficult, to reach out to our partners in government. And I think that it bore a lot of fruit. We talked with the DOJ, we engaged with the AFP, we talked with the legislative, even with the PNP during these past years. Mm-hmm. And we were able to put our foot in. We were able to get the conversation going. And that
he was able, I'm sorry to cut in, Attorney De Gea, but that he was able to do that under a hostile environment.
Yes. That's very difficult if you contemplate it, no? And he was personally attacked also, but he set that aside. He knew that there was a more important and bigger thing to be done. And he made sure that there was also a delineation between his persona and that of the commission. And that's what he always wanted to happen. He wanted the real work to be done. He wanted the message to be out there. He didn't want people to be distracted by the attacks against him. He also didn't want us to be confused with all of these conflicting narratives.
You know, Attorney De Gea, the whole country is gearing up for the next election season, right? And you were just talking to Carlos Conde, veteran journalist, member of Human Rights Watch as well. And he was saying human rights should be made a campaign issue, even though people still think that it's not a gut issue. What makes you think, Attorney De Gea, that it's high time that all these candidates talk about human rights, and why should it have a place in their platform of governance?
Human rights has been sorely misunderstood for the past few decades. People fail to realize that at the time of elections, we must consider the social contract theory in exchange for the votes of the people. Personalities, candidates offer promises or guarantees, and these guarantees pertain to the basic human rights of people. When candidates campaign that there will be doctors in every barangay, that pertains to right to health. When the candidates promise and commit that there will be more schools in the localities, that's the right to education. When they say that more hospitals will have to be accessible to the masses, then that's the right to health. People will still will have to connect those things to human rights. Every aspect of our life is connected to human rights. And people must realize that during the campaign period, in exchange for our votes, are all of these promises. And therefore, we must make important and wise decisions. We must make sure that our voices will count through the votes that we make. And this will ultimately impact our human rights. And candidates must also realize that human rights fulfillment is a state policy that is actually constitutional, that's actually legal, and that they are the embodiments of that commitment, that they will protect and promote human rights in their everyday work, especially the legislative and the executive. Yes.
So it is not a mere campaign issue. In fact, we're talking about the foundation of the platform of governance that they're going to offer the people.
Yes, and our hope is to rally everyone to a human rights-based approach to governance, that at the heart of governance are all human rights, and that they take into consideration the standards of human rights so that, say, for example, in COVID-19, we are guided by the principles of availability, acceptability, cultural adaptability, and all those principles. Because at the end of the day, our life is impacted by governance, which must be responsive to our human rights.
Attorney Leguia, we all know that Senator Bato de la Rosa has just been, well, had just filed his certificate of candidacy for presidency. And in a recent interview, he did say that if he wins as president, he is going to continue the Oplan Tokhang 2, really the backbone of this administration's war on drugs. He did say that he's not going to do so without listening to suggestions and recommendations. But let me hear it from the CHR. How would you assess the drug war in the past several years?
Well, the drug war has been full of challenges in the past years, and we are happy to note that Senator Bato de la Rosa aims to make the process more inclusive and consultative in the long run. We are hopeful because lessons have been learned in the drug war. We are also hopeful that should he win, he must look into the commitments made under the UN Technical Agreement. Reforms have been committed by the Department of Justice and the Department of Foreign Affairs. International mechanisms are closely monitoring the situation on the ground in the Philippines, and they would like to see accountability and they would like to see reforms. Mm-hmm. And this is a golden opportunity for the government to demonstrate that it is serious in its commitment to effect change, to address the gaps in the drug war, to make sure that there is more protection and promotion of human rights on the ground.
But that he is one of those charged with crimes against humanity at the ICC, and yet he's gunning for the presidency. What does that tell you?
Well, several things. It might have some implications on the ongoing probe of the ICC. If we were to look at the statement of the ICC last week, they did say that they are going to proceed with an impartial, separate, and independent investigation. And I think if we're going to look at the experiences of other countries, they do so regardless of who is in power, because their method, their processes are separate and distinct from local mechanisms. Mm-hmm. The investigation will proceed nonetheless. We hope that the government will be more cooperative, because there's still an opportunity to demonstrate complementarity even at this time. And that's the reason why everyone is urging the DOJ to release its report, to make sure that there is accountability in that regard. So plenty of opportunity, and even for him to demonstrate that real reforms can be made.
Finally, we do know, as I mentioned to Carlos Conde a while ago, we do know that Chito Gascon left a void in many people's lives, but also there in the commission, which he led for many years. People are now kind of worried, kind of concerned about the next person who will take the helm there at the CHR. What do we know about the process finding his replacement? Has it begun?
Well, Carmina, let me assure the public that the CHR is a collegial body. We still have four commissioners left, and they are very intelligent and able. And there's still a majority vote as we speak now. So things are still running the way it should be. We source our mandate and our direction from the Constitution. So regardless of who our commissioners or the chairperson are, we do know our work. Our work is defined by the Constitution. Of course, we are prepared to work with anyone, but we would like also to reassure the public that the Commission will stay faithful to its mandate and continue the work that was begun by Chair Chito.
If you had a way, though, would you like the replacement be done now or for the next president to make that appointment?
You know, the change in leadership was a bit premature, Carmina. We did not foresee that Chair Chito was going to die. And we were expecting the next administration to appoint the new set of commissioners. And one of the principles of a healthy and vibrant national human rights institution is plurality and independence. And we do hope that that will be taken into consideration by the government. We want commissioners from diverse backgrounds so that all sectors of society and interests are mirrored in the commission. At the same time, we want to make sure that we have an independent commission. And right now is a very crucial time for the government also to demonstrate that they are strengthening the CHR instead of weakening it. So we do hope that with any appointment that may be done, whether by this administration or by the next, that all of these principles will be taken into consideration. And they will decide, take into consideration also what is best for the public and their human rights.
Attorney Jacqueline Dequia, spokesperson of the Commission on Human Rights. Always a pleasure talking to you. Take care.
Likewise, Carmina. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, the Octa Research Group says Metro Manila could be classified as low risk for COVID-19 by the end of October. More on that when we come back. Stay with us. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we are back. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. The Delta variant fueled surge in COVID-19 cases already slowing down in Metro Manila. That's according to the Octa Research Group. Dr. Guido David says the reproduction number in the National Capital Region is now at 0.63, while the positivity rate dropped to 12%.
Dito sa Metro Manila, nananalo na tayo against the Delta variant. Pero may mga iba pang regions na nagkakaroon pa ng surge, particularly sa Region 2. At may iba pang regions na may medyo mataas pa yung cases. Pero overall, sa buong Pilipinas, magandang nakikita nating trend. At mag-a-average na rin tayo ng 4 digits na lang sa buong Pilipinas by this week, hopefully.
The Philippines logged 12,159 new COVID-19 infections on Sunday. Active cases have dropped to 90,927. That's the lowest in nearly 2 months. The Philippine Tourism Department eyes a further reduction of COVID-19 testing fees for domestic tourists. Tourism Secretary Bernadette Romulo Puyat says currently tourists can avail of a 750 peso or 50% discount on their RT-PCR tests at the Philippine Children's Medical Center. The DOT now looking at further reducing the costs at soon-to-be-established satellite testing centers. It's also subsidizing the price of RT-PCR tests for tourists at the Philippine General Hospital. World News Now, Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen insists nobody can force the island to accept the path China has laid down. That's as she rebuffs Chinese President Xi Jinping's offer of a peaceful reunification on Taiwan's National Day. Here's the full story.
Fighter jets paraded across Taiwan's skies on Sunday, marking the island's National Day. Addressing a rally outside the presidential office in Taipei, leader Tsai Ing-wen continued to rebuff comments made by Chinese President Xi Jinping, who said he wanted to see a peaceful reunification with Taiwan.
We will continue to bolster our national defense and demonstrate our determination to defend ourselves in order to ensure that nobody can force Taiwan to take the path China has laid out for us. A path that offers neither a free and democratic way of life for Taiwan.
China has long claimed Taiwan as its own territory, with the island facing growing military and political pressure to accept Beijing's rule. That includes repeated Chinese Air Force missions in Taiwan's airspace, which Tsai says has seriously affected national security and aviation safety. China's activities there have been condemned internationally. Tsai's speech comes a day after Xi vowed to realize China's reunification with Taiwan. Although he didn't directly mention the use of force, his comments drew an angry backlash from Taipei. Tsai said only Taiwan's people can decide the future.
We will not act rashly, but there should be absolutely no illusions that the Taiwanese people will bow to pressure.
Though Taiwan has repeatedly called for talks with Beijing, it refuses to deal with her and instead has branded her a separatist. She warned her people on Sunday, quote, "We do not have the privilege of letting down our guard."
On to the weather now. Maring has intensified into a severe tropical storm. Several areas remain under signal number 1. Let's get more details now from Pagasa weather forecaster Joey Figuracion. Joey, over to you.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and to our Kababayans watching your program. As of now, still monitoring Marine. Marine intensified while moving westward closer to Bagyong Island, and it was last spotted at 240 kilometers east of Aparicagayan with a maximum sustained wind of 95 kilometers per hour and a gustiness that may reach up to 115 kilometers per hour. Marine is moving westward at a speed of 15 kilometers per hour. In time, tropical cyclone wind signals number 2 was still hoisted over Batanes, Apayao, Kalinga, Mountain Province, Abra, Ilocos provinces, while the tropical cyclone wind signal number 1 was raised over the rest of Isabela, Nueva Vizcaya, Quirino, Ifugao, Benguet, La Union, Pangasinan, Aurora, Nueva Ecija, Tarlac, Zambales, Pampanga, Bulacan, northern portion of Bataan and the northern portion of Quezon, including Puliya Islands and Calaguas Islands. These areas may experience gusty to stormy weather with moderate to intense rains. Sea travel is risky in these areas, including the coastal zones of areas under gale warning, in particular the seaboards of Bataan, Cavite, Batangas, Palawan, Occidental Mindoro, Oriental Mindoro, Quezon, Marinduque, Romblon, Masbate, Camarines Norte, provinces Albay, Sorsogon, Catanduanes, Aklan, Antique, Iloilo, Capiz, Guimaras, and Negros Occidental. We advise our Kababayans, especially the mariners, not to venture out into these areas. Marina is expected to intensify further while traversing in the Luzon Strait, and then may exit our area of responsibility tomorrow morning. For more details, you may follow us on our social media accounts on Facebook and Twitter. Just search DST_Pag-asa. This is Joey Figuracion. Good afternoon.
Thanks, Joey, to you and the rest of the team there. Thanks for all that you do. Take care and you keep safe. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it to you on the news channel.